Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that pits two movies with something in common in a fight to the death to see which one comes out victorious. This week, in the red corner, they're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're altogether ooky from 1991. They're the Addams Family. Ball in the blue corner. Their house is a museum where people come to see them. They really are a scream from 1993. It's the Addams Family Values.
Being in my old room sure brings back memories. Remember Camp Custer?
For preteen offenders.
Oh. Aren't memories precious? Today I like to wander through the house, remembering.
No, sorry, old man. No wandering today. Today we're going straight to the vault.
And the angel told the stork, and the stork flew down from heaven and left a diamond under a leaf in the cabbage patch, and the diamond turned into a baby.
Our parents were having a baby, too. They had sex.
So it's a family feud on this week's shows, but which film is better? Which will be victorious? Let's find out. Welcome to Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clashbutters. This is my costume. I'm a homicidal maniac. They look just like everyone else. I'm Alex Zay.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
Yay! Happy Halloween, everyone!
Hooray!
Hooray! Happy Halloween!
Happy Halloween!
Yeah! I'm glad we all got dressed up.
Yeah.
You're wearing a kind of Halloween-y, themey t-shirt. The Guest is a scary film.
I hadn't thought. I think it's set on Halloween, isn't it? There's a scene. Yeah, there's a Halloween party in it.
The big walkthrough thing. They go through the ball at the end. Yeah.
This was an accident.
Well done.
Good timing.
Well done. And Victoria?
Yep.
Terrifying.
Yeah, just a corporate zombie is what I've come as.
Well, it is Halloween, and although Clashween itself, our last month of horror pairings, is over, today is the night itself, the greatest night of the year, All Hallows Eve, so we're keeping the horror theme sort of going with a double bill of Addams Family. Welcome to part one, then, of the Addams Family versus Addams Family Values. It's V's choices this week. Tell us the thinking, V.
Well, they're a good pair, but also I...
you think?
Yeah. I loved the TV show, and I was really excited for the film.
The old 60s
yeah, really
TV
loved
show.
It. Yeah.
Where, I mean, I watched a lot of TV as a kid, and I don't remember it ever being on, like, BBC Two at 6 o'clock or something, like
it
a lot of them
were. It was always at my grandma's house, so I can pinpoint that as a Sunday at some point. Mm. Yeah, in the 80s, 90s, late 80s.
Really?
Yep.
Last of the Summer Wine. That's what I watched at my grandma's.
You ease into that one,
first
definitely.
Sitcom I ever saw. Loved it. Thought it was the funniest thing in the world.
Yeah.
Was it Seymour, the inventor? I think Foggy left. or potentially died. I don't know which.
Who knows?
But Seymour came in and he was, I think he was an inventor. He was a great character for a kid.
Literally no one asked. Call Vicky.
No, it's fine. Thank you, Chris. So anyway, I was really excited to see both of them at the cinema. I have nothing but love and good feelings towards both these films. And now maybe some structural issues. But isn't that rewarding for me? When I saw these, when I was little, I was like, I love them. And now I'm like, I love them, but I know more. And that's a satisfying experience as you grow up and you learn things.
Yeah.
And then you can be critical about
things that you
things
used
that
to love.
Used to cherish.
What fun.
Yeah. For me, that is fun.
Pull apart childhood dreams.
Yeah, and feel like a big old grown up.
Mm.
Yeah.
Fine. Fine. All right, cool. What was the clue you gave on last week's show?
This week's episodes are all relative.
And very good it was. Chris followed that up on Twitter with
Someone clicking their fingers.
Someone. Dobby the house elf, confusing.
Well, yeah, I was looking around. I mean, there was Ferris Bueller clicking, there was Dobby the house elf,
right.
And then people I didn't recognise, so I went, Dobby, that'll confuse people.
Yeah, and it did.
No, it did. I don't think anyone picked Harry Potter, though, so...
No, but someone did literally write the phrase, Dobby has confused me.
Good.
I don't think you could ask for any more of a direct confusion response.
Good.
Anyway, your guesses were discovered festering on our Twitter, at ClashPod. We're also on Instagram and TikTok, at ClashPod, with loads of extras and videos from the show. Plus, I'm going to keep mentioning it until we hit a billion subscribers.
Wow, what happens when we do that?
Well, we won't be doing this show anymore. We'll be retired. A billion YouTube subscribers. Woo! We have some very funny videos edited together by our brilliant video editor, Banyabat, and they're all on our YouTube channel. That's our Clash of the Titles YouTube channel. It's all up there. Aaron, a long-time listener, he subscribed recently for the first time. Took you a while, Aaron. As a fan of the show, I'm surprised it took you as long
like
as you did.
He's like our fourth host. What's going on?
Yeah, but he did say he subscribed and liked it.
Great.
So that's a positive review there. Right then, guesses. Two correct answers this week. So congrats to Andrew Logan, but well done to our winner and the first correct guess. It's long-time listener Danny Baker. Danny, your prize is... Oh, it's too exciting. I will explain. Tickets to a lecture given by eminent psychologist Dr. Pinderschloss about the familiar theory of displacement. What a brilliant prize, Jess.
Today's going to be a lot of fun. To be fair, I think he got that before the second clue.
Oh,
yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Good job.
Great bit of admin there.
Good
Chris.
Job all round.
Congrats, everyone.
Well done, Vicky.
But mainly Danny Baker, yeah. who got it. Vicky knew when she gave the clue what the films were. So it sort of takes the sheen off. Right then. Are we doing the connection section?
I have not.
I've got one.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Mine is, and this is for me, not anyone else, but I never realised this until this watch, because scrutiny as an adult. Mm-hmm. Noticing things you hadn't noticed before. Mm-hmm. Mercedes McNabb.
I've got it written down. That was what I was going to say.
You didn't notice before?
Never.
No. Oh, okay.
Never. So the Girl Scout, who's going to buy lemonade but doesn't, is actually, obviously, Amanda Buckman from Camp Chippewa in the second film.
So are we thinking she's playing the same character?
No.
No, I didn't.
Or maybe
didn't feel
that Girl Scout could be Amanda Buckman.
Yeah, she could. Yeah, you're right.
Shared universe. And the only other thing I was going to say,
I mean, it is a shared
literally,
universe.
Literally, it's a sequel, essentially.
Oh, brilliant!
But weird that both films decided to be about a big con, making both plots essentially
yeah,
the same.
So you said that the other week in the pub, and I've really run with that in when I've come to thinking about this film.
Because you can go in any direction, guys.
Yeah. But they must
another
have been
con.
Like, yeah, if it's not broke though, writers, like, what worked last time? I can't believe that you wouldn't. Would you get away with that now?
But should we use a different character? Nope, Fester again. Let's do Fester
again. But
they
would have had me to go, the beating heart of this is the brothers. So let's just do the same again. Okay, yeah. Cool, let's go.
I've got another one, actually. I just thought of one. Both feature messed up stage productions.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah, that's enough. Right then. So on Thursday, I'll be talking about the value of family and taking us to Camp Chippewa. Which means today, V is reminding us that they do what they want to do, say what they want to say, live how they want to live, play how they want to play. It's the Addams Family.
Yeah, it's me. And you kind of ruined what was going to be my introduction, right. Which was me speaking the song, both songs.
We should talk more before a show. I've always said that.
I'm just going to go into it.
I think you should do it anyway.
I won't do the original song, which I was going to do, because you've done a lot of that.
Are you going to do the Hammer song?
Hi.
Yay!
He just did a bit of it.
That's what I was doing.
No, I know, but just the rush I got, I'd forgotten about it.
But we should have rehearsed this, because I could have done the other person who speaks in the background.
Yeah.
A little bit of chicken.
No, it's hard. I've had to take out some words, because it doesn't scan for me it does for Hammer.
It really didn't scan for Hammer. It's possibly one of the worst movie tie-in songs ever.
Hey.
It's just him he uses too many words at once. It's so bad, and yet I was so excited for it. I did buy the CD single, and I still own it.
So you'll like this, because you're more into this nostalgia trip than maybe you are, but I recorded it off the radio, because it was always on, and you know when you used to press record and play at the same time?
Yeah.
And I'd forgotten all about that, and the rush when the song came on, I was screaming at Mark. It's like, what are you talking about? I was like, this is an amazing... No, actually.
Were you annoyed when Bruno Brooks didn't interrupt it at the end?
The best one of those, I had a Green Day's Basket Case. I recorded that off the radio. It was Dr. Fox on the Pepsi chart show or something. And I kept it for years because it's so funny, because he was being all cool. He's like, yeah, and it's brand new. This is Green Basket.
Oh, no.
Like, you fucking idiot.
Get back to the surgery, doctor.
Okay. The Fox surgery.
I'm going to speak it.
Yay.
Now, I was cold cooling, just kicking it round the house, when a knock at the voice. Yo, Hammer, can you come out? Now, I don't mind being a friend and showing a little flavour, but Wednesday, Pugsley, Gomez, Festa, man, then some strange neighbours. I remember the day I needed a little bit of pepper.
For my chicken.
the next thing you know, coming at me was a hand with fingers half-stepping. Now, I tried to play along, like I was having a ball. But what did I see? A perm with feet. Stand about 3 feet tall. They do what they want to do. Say what they want to say. Live how they want to live. Play how they want to play. Dance how they want to dance. Kick and they slap a friend out of his family.
Amazing.
Wonderful.
And that is the plot of Adam's Family Values. It was going fine until kick and they slap a friend.
Yeah, that's why I left that out of my read. I was like, what does that mean?
I guess there is the Cossack dance in the first film. Maybe he's talking about the Cossack dance.
The Mamushka. Yeah, or maybe Thing. I guess Thing slaps. Does Thing slap someone? He is just a hand. It's probably within his armoury.
Pun.
Anyway.
Were you not punning?
Yeah, I definitely.
Enough of trying to decipher MC Hammer's lyrics.
Yeah.
Vicky, you saw this film at the cinema.
I did. That's it.
Yeah.
I went to the cinema with my family when it came out.
Yes, I'm the same and had a very nice time.
I loved it.
I was excited. This is one of those films I cut out the pictures and put them on my folders for school. Super excited. Yeah, mum, dad, me, my brother... Everyone enjoyed it. Yeah.
It was a big deal, wasn't it? Because I didn't see it at the cinema. I saw it when it came out in video, but I do remember the hubbub around it when it was being released, and that Hammer song and the video for the Hammer song. It was like a big deal, this film coming out.
Yeah, because I'll get into the story now, but, you know, it was a troubled production and there were low expectations, but not for me.
Well, maybe we should do what we agreed to do the other week, which is shout out to marketing. Well done, marketing.
Literally got it written down here. Yeah. 100%. The marketing on this is great. Proper good marketing. Not in the second movie, unfortunately.
No. We'll get into that as well. But let's go back in time to the original Addams Family, a fictional cartoon created by Charles Addams, appeared in 150 single-panel cartoons, about half of which were published in The New Yorker over a 50-year period from 1938 onwards.
Wow.
So then it became a TV series in 1964. We've already done this. So Alex didn't watch it. You did. I watched it as well.
Watched it all the time.
I feel like the Munsters was on more than the Addams Family in the UK.
And I liked both.
Yeah. I mean, they were just perfect for a kid. It was quite sophisticated humour, but it was like you were watching a cartoon come to life.
Yep.
Just all really lovable characters.
Loved it.
So, I found on an American Film Institute website all these different announcements of Addams Family films over the years. It was announced in 1965 that they were going to make a movie. That didn't happen. It was announced in 1987 they were going to make a movie. That didn't happen. In 1989, they announced that Ivan Reitman was directing Cher and Kevin Kline in a movie version.
Love it. That would have been great.
A year later, they announced it again. Angelica Houston and Robin Williams playing Gomez.
Oh, okay.
Can see all that. But now there's a long, boring story that I won't get involving the comic strip rights and the TV rights, because they were all over the place. Charles Adams'
Please,
widow...
get involved.
No, it's dull.
Is it?
It's dull.
I love rights conversations.
But it ended up with Scott Rudin, Uber producer Scott Rubin, producing at Orion. So he wanted Tim Burton. But Tim Burton was busy with the Batmans. Terry Gilliam passed. Joe Dante, David Lynch, Rob Reiner, all in the running, all did not want to direct this movie. Barry Sonnenfeld was finishing up working on Misery as DP when he received the script, which he didn't like. And he was not trying to be a director. So he loved the original drawings, however, and he met with Scott Rudin to talk about it. And Rudin told him, I want a visual stylist over a comedy director. And he also told him, all the good directors have passed.
Didn't they do a practical joke on the set where every time journalists came to set, on Barry Sonnenfeld's director's chair, they removed his name and put the name of one of the directors that had passed on it?
That would make you feel terrible.
Apparently Barry Sonnenfeld said, I can take a joke.
And then he passed out. Anyway, Sonnenfeld said yes. He said it was tough to figure out the tone of this and keep it consistent, though. He wanted something more in line with the comics than the TV show. He thought that was too broad. He thought that the TV show forced jokes on the audience, and he wanted the audiences to find the jokes. He talked about the fact that the panels, when you looked at them, you didn't immediately see where the funny was. You had to look around to figure out where it was, and he wanted his frames to be like that. So they got the writer of Beetlejuice and the writer of Edward Scissorhands on board.
They really wanted Burton. They wanted Burton.
But equally, it makes sense pairing those two visions. This is the script that Barry Sonnenfeld did not like, and so he got Paul Rudnick on board to rewrite it and
good move.
Add jokes.
Good move.
Yeah.
Bearing in mind Paul Rudnick wrote the sequel.
Yeah.
I think that was a smart thing to do.
Interesting character. He wrote Sister Act,
yeah,
but his name is not on Sister Act. He was somehow allowed to use the pseudonym because he hated what they did with his script for Sister Act.
Such a good film.
Is it?
Oh my God, I love it.
Not what he wrote.
No.
I think he wrote something funnier but more cynical.
Okay.
And then it became a sort of schmaltzy family film.
That's why I like it. Yeah, yes.
He's quite as you see, Adam's Family Values, is there's a lot of sort of dark humour in it that was removed from Sister Act.
Yeah. 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 Well, we'll talk about it on Thursday. There are a couple of moments in Adam's Family Values where I think the gag outweighs, like, he's gone for a gag. And it kind of spoils your image of the Addams Family,
like
because it's
sex gag.
Yeah, there's one of those, a couple of those, and a few others. It's a bit too cynical at points.
Mm. So casting, I talked about who didn't play the roles. Raul Julia, Barry Sonnenfeld said he was born to play Gomez, both his emotions and his joy for life. He said he basically was Gomez. Angelica Houston, as I said, the studio wanted Cher, but Barry Sonnenfeld insisted on Angelica Houston. He said Christina Ricci was smarter and more articulate than him, and that's why he gave her the role.
There's a really
of
funny
Wednesday.
Story about... apparently her mum told her just to act when she went for the audition. Her mum was like, just do Winona Ryder and Beetlejuice.
No,
and
that's true.
Christina Ricci says that story. She says, I walked in and I just did my impression of Winona Ryder and Beetlejuice,
right,
and it worked.
Okay.
She was the next generation's Winona Ryder because they ended up playing sisters in Mermaids. And it's this is the same person almost. Jimmy Workman's sister auditioned for Wednesday, did not get the part, but told Barry Sonnenfeld, my brother looks like Pugsley. He got the role of Pugsley. And then Christopher Lloyd... strange bit of casting that, because Christopher Lloyd is a tall, thin man.
Yeah.
But Sonnenfeld said that as soon as the camera started rolling, he didn't know how he did it, but Christopher Lloyd would become short and squat.
I swear the first time I watched this, I did not think...
That's Doc Brown. No.
Doc Brown from Back to the Future. I didn't connect the two whatsoever.
It's still weirdly hard to see.
Mm, it is.
Wild.
Yes.
So they went way over budget, way over schedule. Orion ran out of money, so halfway through the shoot, they sold the film to Paramount, as that was the only commercial property that they had on the go. Frank Mancuso had seen the first 50 minutes. He ran Paramount, and he absolutely loved it, purchased it on the spot. Then he got fired.
Oh.
The new Paramount chairman, Stanley Jaffe, hated what he saw, which caused problems. It made Barry Sonnenfeld miserable. At the time, in Empire, he did an interview, and he said he lost 13 pounds in the first 10 weeks. Tension was incredible. 3 weeks in, I was standing behind a chair when I started to feel this tremendous pressure in my chest as if someone was blowing up a balloon inside me. Before I knew what was happening, I got very dizzy, tried to sit down, and wham, I'd passed out. I remember begging Scott Rudin, please let me get up and get going again. If we have to stop every time I faint or start to cry, we'll never get this movie done.
Oh my God.
But obviously, this is Scott Rudin, who in recent months, stories have come out about him being a bully, being difficult, essentially been cancelled. And Sonnenfeld's been asked about this more recently. He said he can be a lovely, concerned, giving person. He can also be a bully and a pathological liar. So this was putting pressure on Sonnenfeld while he was making the film. He tells a strange story about how Rudin would come in and shout at him. And so he would take all the cushions off his couch and build a fort. I would climb into the cushions and I would say, "I can't hear you, I'm in the fort." And Scott, because he's as juvenile as I am, would never ever break the sanctity of the fort. He would bend over and scream, "Get out of the fort, Barry. I'm not kidding, I have other meetings." But he would never come in the fort.
What weird. A way what? To run a whatever million pound enterprise.
Who are these people?
Children.
Imagine if we did this before a podcast.
I mean, I can, fully. So, yeah.
The difficulty with Stanley Jaffe continued. He said, "I showed my director's cut to executives at Paramount and there was not a single laugh. I was called into the office 20 minutes later after they discussed everything and everyone was there except Stanley and they were hugging me and clapping. I said, 'What are you doing?' I was in the screening room. There was not a single laugh. They told me that since Stanley wasn't laughing, they couldn't."
Oh.
Which is, this is something that carries over into family values, which we'll talk about on Thursday. But yes, horrible, horrible shoot, but hugely popular and successful film.
Mm.
Any more?
Only the interesting story that Fester in the original script was an imposter.
Yes.
And it was when they read the script, the cast read the script, and they were like, "It doesn't work." The cast at the read-through, the table read, were like, "We don't like this. Fester needs to be the real Fester." And because Christina Ricci was so good at speaking, they sent her to Scott Rudin and said, "Tell them we want Fester to be the real Fester." It's Scott Rudin who tells this story, and he says, she explained to us why Fester had to be the real Fester throughout, and we had to figure out how to make it work. She was such a brilliant spokesperson that we rewrote 20 pages of the script.
Yep, I'll get to that when we get to the ending.
I mean, I didn't know. This is why I said we need to talk more before the show. And on that note, I left my notebook with my notes in, so I'm just going to go to my fort for 1 second.
Do you want to keep talking, Vicky?
Do you want to do some small talk?
No. Let's talk about the Addams Family.
Look, I've just found a tear. This is silk. What am I supposed to do?
Well, if we're looking for a clash queue on Wednesday, how do you repair a tear in a second-hand silk blouse?
Sorry, just to be clear, it's actually quite... Because it's from the cuff to the sleeve, so it's by a hemline, effectively. So it should be pretty straightforward.
Should we talk about the film?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, let's start with the family. The film begins with boiling water being poured on some Christmas carolers. I think killing them, maybe, which is a strong start.
Certainly scarring them.
Yeah.
I imagine it was oil as well in the classic sort of fort.
The castle
keep when they got if the trap boiling... people between the guillotine.
Murder holes, that's what they're called.
Murder holes, yes. Yeah.
If it's boiling oil, there's a good chance they might be dead.
Oh, yeah, that's what they're designed for, yeah.
Tough. And we see a beautiful doll's house, and we see Thing racing through the house. I just remember how amazing it was seeing Thing for the first time in the movie.
No, it's not bad though.
It gets better in movie two. I think it looks a bit shoddy now.
It must just be pure nostalgia for me because I was like, that's absolutely fine. You couldn't do better now. I know that's mad. I was like, you could, obviously. But I was like, that's great.
I think it looks fine, apart from a bit later on when it's on a pond. But this is about the Sonnenfeld thing. He says he always sees a camera as more than a recording device. It's a storytelling device. And it's how he used the camera on the first three Coen Brothers film. And there's a lot in common with Raising Arizona, I think, in terms of the visuals we see here. And that point of view stuff, the arrow, the racing down the corridor, that's all Barry Sonnenfeld. That's what he's bringing to this. So what do we know? Fester. He's lost in the Bermuda Triangle. They've spent 25 years trying to contact him in the Great Beyond, and for 25 years, nothing. So, Morticia. We meet the different members of the family. Morticia, played by Angelica Houston. Sonnenfeld's only instruction for his cinematographer was that she had her own personal light.
She does.
Brightening her eyes, but plunging her chin and forehead into darkness.
I think it's fantastic.
Mm.
And it's more pronounced in Family Values for whatever reasons. So they've obviously decided it works. But I understand that it makes shadows on her face that are useful for the character. But it also just brings out her beauty anyway and just makes it look like a classic 40s movie star, which you then impart all of that glamour into Morticia as well. I'm obsessed with the light on her eyes.
Part of her movement as well, because of the tape that they had to wrap her head
face in.
Basically, because they wanted her eyes to point slightly upwards, so they wrapped tape around the back of her head underneath her wig. And she said it was really, really painful. And if she didn't take a break from it at lunchtime, like, she'd have a headache for the rest of the day. And also, if she turned her head left or right, it would snap the tape, which is why...
Oh, she's so still.
It's why she's so still.
She's so composed.
And wouldn't you know that when you watch her turn, she turns with her body, which makes her look, like you said, even more graceful.
Yeah, that's so... Because one of the reasons I love her so much is that I'm so jealous of her composure, because I don't move. I move like a mess, like, but she just floats along.
Yeah, I mean, she would never rip her silk blouse sleeve.
She wouldn't... One, I've only got one silk thing.
Do you know what it is? You need to turn more like that.
I know. We, like that. We all do.
Like the as you say, though,
head's like going from side to side.
I'm just all like, like all the time.
It's like Hooch in Turner and Hooch.
So as you say, that fabric tabs were glued at her temples, which pulled the eyes upwards, right. And a second strap was added to balance the appearance of the lower part of her face with the upper. And on top of this, the bands would snap any time she turned her head. So we need to just attach rubber bands to your head.
I mean,
hey, why not?
I'm in for doing that.
Yeah, look.
To you.
I often talk to you, I don't know why I talk to you two about it, it's fucking pointless, about do I need to have work done or not? But this sounds free, it sounds workable, it sounds temporary, which I'm into. So yeah, let's give it a whirl.
All right, cool.
Let's get that chin right up. Perfect. Smooth all this out.
So we've got lots of business now. Lots of bits of business. It's essentially a series of sketches. For quite a while.
Yes.
The best one being the introduction of Wednesday, though. That's okay. The best one.
What do you like about that?
What do I like about that? Yeah. I just love the line, "Don't be a baby, I know what I'm doing," while Pugsley sits in an electric chair. It's just, everything Wednesday says in this is gold.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's about, you know, Sonnenfeld talks about, he did a lot of interviews last year for this film because it was the anniversary. And in every interview, he said, "I don't see them as dysfunctional. They're the most functional family because they love each other and they allow their kids to make mistakes."
I completely 100%. Agree.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Even if those mistakes involve trying to kill each other.
Their parents love each other deeply, are obsessed with each other. So that's, I didn't notice that when I was a child. Like, basically, when I watched this when I was 10, all I cared about was Wednesday. She just steals the whole thing. And what the grown-ups were doing, I wasn't really paying much attention to. But now watching it as an adult, especially the relationship of the parents, just like, God, that's amazing. Like, who wouldn't be jealous of that? Mm. And they love their kids and their kids love them and the kids are obedient. And it's fantastic.
I literally wrote down one of the happiest marriages in movie land. Yes. I just think that it's beautiful to watch, but it's more than that as well, because I think what's fascinating is the fact that they're all doing stuff, but they're enjoying time together. Like, granted, Pugsley's in an electric chair, but they find fun. Yeah. They're not a family, and it's a simple thing. They're not a family that sit around watching TV. They know how to entertain themselves, and they know how to have fun with each other.
Pugsley isn't against being electrocuted.
No, he loves it.
Yeah. So when you walk in on the boys playing with an electric chair, what do you do? Do they have to make their own mistakes?
It's very difficult because you want to encourage interest in the STEM subjects. So you're balancing that as a parent whilst also trying to keep an eye on health and safety. Really, it's a very challenging time to be a parent when you walk in on that situation. Tricky. But that does sound quite innocent compared to what I might walk in a few years.
Oh.
I'm just worried about their awkward teenage years.
But they have each other, because that's why, because you've got how many? 7 of them now?
Yeah, they just keep going.
they reproduce by mitosis. They just keep
going. Why mitosis? Sorry, am I not a sexual being to you? Sorry. I'm sorry, I couldn't help it. Sorry, that's gross. Don't answer that question.
You are, of course you are. I mean,
don't!
Now there's talk about work being done as well.
It's a different kettle of fish, I guess.
Is that what you call it?
I'm not even that done. Jesus.
You want to worry if you find a kettle of fish under their bed.
Oh dear.
Oh, it's hard to follow that. We got Gomez firing golf balls at a judge's house. We got Morticia cutting the heads off roses. We meet a lawyer called Tully. Tully is Gomez's lawyer.
Is he in the TV show? I can't remember him. Because they're like, oh, here's Tully. And I was like, oh, that's just a character I didn't remember. But he's familiar to the
family. I don't know what happened in the show.
I mean, both of you, we went to every end to basically say we're huge fans of the TV show. So why don't you tell us? Is Tully in the show? Does what do you want to tell us?
Yes, 100%.
He is.
Okay. Yeah.
My favourite character, actually. Sounds like Tilly. He's Gomez's last paying client, and he's got a plan. They have a sword fight, apparently using real swords. That's what their choreographer insisted on. I don't know if that's true.
I can't believe that. On any given day, though, Dan Hedaya is probably one of the best things in any movie. Sure. And it's so weird that everyone is so good in this. You're just like, he's all right.
True.
So weird.
Yeah. What a face. But Dan Hedaya's Tully wants Fester's money in his name for tax purposes. So it's kind of what he's here for. And also to open a book that says Gone with the Wind so wind comes out. Because that's going to come in useful later.
But it doesn't. Isn't that so weird? At the end, they don't do a callback to Gone with the Wind. No. They go, the hurricane or something. Yeah. Whatever. I'm like, no, the book from the start.
Yeah, that one's fine.
That was the joke. It's a callback.
And then we've got the start of the con. But maybe we'll talk about that after a quick break.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Yeah, we will talk about it. It's the con starting. So there's a loan shark called Mrs. Craven, and she introduces Tully to her son, Gordon, who's an enforcer, who's played by Christopher Lloyd. And guess what? He looks like Fester. Yeah. We'll talk about more about that when we talk about the ending that changed. But so they decide to have a seance to try and get Gordon as Fester within the family.
Can we just talk about how Gordon eats spaghetti being one of the greatest ways I've ever seen any character slash actor in a movie eat spaghetti? It's horrific.
I can't remember it.
He's just shoving it like...
Oh, like down.
Yeah, he's really low to the plate, like an animal, like very feral.
Yeah.
Great.
And so just before this seance starts, Fester appears at the door. He just looks so funny.
Yeah.
Doesn't he? He doesn't have to do or say anything, just that the appearance is just hilarious.
Yeah.
And he's accompanied by his doctor. Alex, have you got any...
I did it at the start and I proved that it's very actually difficult to do, actually.
I wasn't going to say the doctor's name.
Dr. Pinderschloss!
Okay. Dr. Pinderschloss, who explains that he was found in Miami in a tuna net, because, of course...
Which is true. He actually was found in Miami.
I guess he was. But maybe not when they were shooting it, or maybe not when they were writing it. So there's a picture of young Gomez and Fester at Camp Custer for preteen offenders. And we see a picture of conjoined twins, Flora and Fauna, over whom they fell out. I like that, but, you know, it's just a series of jokes. It's hard to explain this film and talk about it, but Pugsley appears with a stop sign and you hear a crash in the background.
Yeah.
That's a dark joke.
It's really dark. Yeah. It actually upset me a little bit this time.
Bravo, Pugsley. Yeah. You've just murdered some people.
Come on, it's funny, babies.
Fester and Gomez head into the vault. A book called Greed gets them in there by pulling that out, and they head down a slide.
The same tiny slide a million times. Yes. Like the poor actors, like, go down this tiny slide and we'll just cut it together and it'll look like a big slide, except it won't.
But when you were a kid, any kind of slide in a film was exciting, wasn't it? Like, we had it recently in Romancing the Stone, the mud slide. And just...
Oh, a little... No, I'm not being paid for this. I went to a pub at the weekend with a slide in it.
What? Like, how? Like, what?
It's
tell me
massive.
Everything.
Like, do you want to know?
Do you mean like an helter skelter?
Yep.
Like the one with, like, in the movie.
But covered. The kids call it a tube slide. So
hang on a sec. Rewind. Is it for kids?
Well, kids are on it, but there are grown-ups on it too. And it's quite steep. It was too steep for me to go on. I was a little bit nervous about it. The kids went on it a lot, but you see grown-ups coming down it hammered. Pretty amazing.
Where's this?
Waterloo.
Do you want to name check it? It sounds like it deserves a name check.
Oh, it's a Brewdog pub, but I don't know if it's got an actual name. Okay. Maybe just Brewdog Waterloo. It's quite new and it's vast. It's vast. It's like a town. It's good.
Let's go there.
Now.
Well, I can wrap this up in 10.
All right.
Because the jokes come thick and fast. The vault code is 21011, eyes, fingers, toes. I don't think I got that when I was younger. That's funny. Gomez. We got a scene where Gomez is driving a train with real people inside.
That scared me when I was little. Yeah. It's terrifying because it also makes no sense, but I found that quite scary when I was young.
Because he crashes it.
Yeah.
Very Men in Black kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
It's got that Men in Black vibe. And in fact...
And Beetlejuice.
The font, I swear...
It's Beetlejuice.
Yeah.
No, when he opens the locker and there's an entire civilization in the locker.
Oh, yeah.
Is that Men in Black or Men in Black 2? I think it's 2.
It's very Beetlejuice.
Is the font reminds me of Men in Black in this, or is that just me? I kept seeing it. You know the font where it comes up at the start and says, Adam's Family? I swear that's the same font. I couldn't remember.
Maybe you just got the same person to do it.
Yeah, well, no one's mentioned Will Smith yet, so maybe I just watched the wrong movie. I'm waiting for all my notes about aliens to come in useful.
Wednesday isn't sure about Fester. She's the first one to twig, and then Morticia starts smelling a rat. So she takes him on a tour of the statues of their dead relatives, and her warning for him is their family motto, "We gladly feast on those who would subdue us." And then we get some displacement theory to explain why Gomez isn't sure about Fester.
Yeah.
So Dr.
Pinderschloss
claims that Gomez's feeling of guilt for driving Fester away has caused displacement and means that he loves him but resents him, which means he loves him but he hates him. That's why he hates him, and that's why he has to be Fester. I think that's her logic.
Yeah.
And then...
I mean, you're not looking for logic, are you?
No. I'm having a tricky time here, to be honest. So Fester starts bonding with the kids. They're looking at scabs together, blowing shit up. And he bonds with Gomez, and he's starting to really feel the Addams Family, but he has a job to do. And so... The play is a play at Wednesday and Pugsley's school. And Fester refuses to go because he's got to get... his job done.
Yep.
So at the school, they meet Wednesday's teacher, who says, picking heroes, Wednesday brought in a picture of her great aunt who was burned as a witch. And Morticia says, don't worry, we've told Wednesday College first.
So funny.
Gomez and Morticia can't bear the cute kids' songs. And then Fester shows up at the show. He's not doing his work. He's bringing the kids some props. And then we get a scene from Hamlet. And it's Wednesday and Pugsley performing the scene, and they immediately start cutting off limbs and opening veins and slitting wrists and spraying the audience with blood.
It's so good.
And the audience looks completely shocked into silence while Gomez and Morticia give them a standing ovation.
Don't forget we met Tully's son, Little Tully, a moment ago. Did you recognise him?
No. I didn't. But I'm sorry, just trying to remember the child. No, I didn't.
When Tully introduces his son, that is an actor called Whit Hertford, and I recognised him because he is the kid from fucking Jurassic Park who Sam Neill terrorises with the raptor claw at the start.
No way! Yeah. Yeah. Wow, that That's good
yeah.
skills.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who the fan theory claimed grew up to be Chris Pratt's character. Which is quite a funny fan theory.
That's funny.
But Sonnenfeld said of that scene on stage, that's where he feels he came the closest to bringing a Charles Adams cartoon to life.
Right.
And so we're on to the party. And there's footage of this. It took 7 days to shoot this party. And Barry Sonnenfeld directed all of them in a tuxedo.
Oh.
And so Cousin It shows up in a sports car playing Too Legit to Quit by MC Hammer. That's not aged as well.
No.
Even though I did buy that single as well.
Yeah.
And he dances with Margaret. That's Tully's wife, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah.
And he flirts with her and they sort of fall for each other.
So awesome. I remember that subplot throughout years. It's so good.
It's such a strange subplot. Because the scene ends with him driving off and asking him asking her to call him. So Wednesday walks in on Gordon's mum shaving his head to become Fester. So she knows now and she runs off. She's
gone.
Don't
you love that she's wearing a party frock and she looks just like her mum? Like, that's really sweet. Mm. Like, she's got a Morticia-style dress on. It's just so lovely. Mm. It's cute.
Flora and Fauna show up, the conjoined twins, who are twice the woman that Morticia is. And then we get the Mamushka Cossack dance.
It's good.
Which doesn't really make sense if Gordon wasn't Fester, because how would he know every dance move?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that must have been rewrites.
They're knives.
Yeah.
There's knives. They're catching. Fester catches one in her mouth.
Mm.
There's a longer version of this that's out now that they recut.
It's
apparently
great.
This dancing got cut down for the theatrical release and Barry Sonnenfeld's just overseen a new version. Mm-hmm. The twins take off in a straitjacket.
I forgot about that. That's brilliant.
And then we got a bit of plot, unfortunately, or maybe it's useful. So Tully has a restraining order against the Adams family, keeping them away from Fester's house because Fester owns the house now. They point out that he isn't even Uncle Fester. And then Gomez says, they say a man who represents himself is a fool. What has God is my witness, I am that fool. And then promptly loses the case because the judge is the man who's house he's been hitting golf balls at. So they're kicked out of their house and they're staying in a motel, which is where we get normality. We get the fish out of water sort of subplot. So
I thought this bit went on so much longer.
Mm.
It's really quick.
Yeah.
It could go on longer.
Yeah, it's great.
I would hazard, I'd guess, a suggestion. But a Girl Scout asked them to take their cookies in exchange for their dodgy lemon drinks. Are they made from real Girl Scouts? Wednesday asked. Morticia telling a story to toddlers in school of Hansel and Gretel about the poor defenceless witch. And Sonnenfeld says this is the only thing he regretted from the movie.
Making those kids cry.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I know you're going to roll your eyes. I can't watch that. It's so upsetting.
Oh, I mean, I'm going to go early on my change if we get here. But unless you know how they did it, because I'm fascinated.
I've read something.
Oh, have you?
What? I know. I heard him say it.
Great. Tell me.
I heard him say it.
So what did they do? Because, I mean, unless, in theory, the only way to really do that properly
I'm interested to hear what you're going to say.
Great. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Go on.
The way you leant in, put your chin on your hand, and I'm really interested, is like, come on then.
Yeah, it wasn't.
What are you going to do? And how deep can I put the hole beneath you? So the only way that I think you could do it is if you just put them there, make sure they were fed and watered enough so you weren't making them hungry or tired. If they wanted to sleep, they could sleep. And naturally just film them as long as it took for kids who just eventually, because they're bored, start crying anyway. And
yeah,
then you've got your shot for the movie.
Yeah.
And obviously, I know they didn't do that.
How long do you think a child is going to sit still there until it starts crying? It'll move quite quickly.
It might get up and say,
yes,
I'm bored as fuck.
I don't see you can have 20 kids sitting still for an hour until they all start crying.
Okay, I've got a theory. An adult starts crying nearby, and then the kids start crying because they're seeing someone cry.
This is
I'm
so
not
weird.
A parent. V, what? Kids just left on their own sometimes just cry because that's what kids do, right?
I would just say, but it's clear. I mean, this is just the nuance that you might see this. I'm not sorry. I was going to assume you wouldn't, and that's unfair. It's a really upset cry. It's not a bored cry, and you can tell the difference. They look genuinely upset.
Well, do you want to say what he did?
I read that he was like, once the shot was done, he was really sweet to the kids, and he was like, well done, children, you did amazing. Hooray for you. But listen, just one more thing we've got to do. You're all going to get a measles vaccination. You've got to have a jab. And so that scared them, and they kind of knew what that was. And so that's the cry that they do is like a dawning realization cry.
Yeah, it's
bad. It's so sad. Is that what you read?
Yeah. Because he thought he had the shot. The shot was them all staring at her.
Yeah.
In sort of disbelief when she's telling the story. And then he was leaving for the day, and the producer said, "You haven't got it. You've got to make them cry."
Oh my God.
That is someone passing the buck.
Yeah.
He knows as a director, the button on that scene is kids crying. It's not kids looking bored.
And so he said measles injections was what did it, apparently.
Yeah.
You've got real tears. Finn gets a job at Federal Express. Good visual gag. Gomez is just watching daytime TV in a white t-shirt, eating crisps, calling into Sally, Jesse, Raphael, asking where the witches hang out. Morticia will not stand for this. And so he heads to the house and demands to speak to Festa, where she gets chained to a rack. Thing races home, and we sort of get a mini action scene as he races through traffic. Gomez somersaults through the window and starts sword fighting Tully again. And then they head to the vault. Festa grabs a book, Hurricane Irene. Is that a book?
No idea.
Should have done Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, that would have worked. Yeah. Nice callback.
And they use that as a weapon as Gomez frees Morticia, and so the villains are all sent flying away using early computer-generated effects and straight into graves. Yeah.
Are they dead? Does it matter? Great.
So we've won. And so 7 months later, it's Halloween. Pugsley looks like Festa now.
So nice.
Margaret's with Cousin It. Wednesday for Halloween is dressed as herself because a homicidal maniac looks like everyone else. And it seems he really is Festa. He just had amnesia. I like the honesty and the nod slash wink of them saying stranger things have happened. Like, we don't need to explain this. They decide to go out in the garden and play Wake the Dead by digging up graves. And then we learn that Morticia is pregnant by her knitting a baby grow with extra legs. It ends with them passionately kissing. And then, very unfortunately, we get the MC Hammer rap rather than the original theme tune.
That original theme isn't used enough in this.
No, it's not.
It's used very effectively at the start.
Well,
it's used more here than it is on Thursday, though, which is, I think, a real issue. But yeah, all you need is the first few bars, and then you can go into the rap.
Yeah.
You'll still get his publicity, Hammer. Mm. So yeah, that's the end of it. But it's dedicated to Lady Coylton, the film. Mm-hmm. And so I did some research on her. This was a woman called Barbara Barb, who was born in Brooklyn in 1920. And she became Barbara Adams for the 2 years she was married to the cartoonist Charles Adams. And then shortly after they were divorced, she became Lady Coylton by marrying an English baron named Henry Lennox de Beaugine. She was married to him for 2 years, and yet she had the rights to the Adams.
Wow.
Quite a big chunk of them. She talked him into it in those 2 years.
Right.
And so his next wife believes that or certain members of the family believe that the character that Joan Cusack plays in Adams Family Values is loosely based on Lady Coylton. Yes, 75% of the rights to his work was signed over to her, and no one quite knows how she did it. And you know what? She looks a little bit like Morticia. The way she carried herself and dressed and looks. So,
that's a lot of rights. You know I love a rights chap.
Well,
I've already said it. You've ticked a box for me there. 75% in 2 years.
Yes.
That's some amazing work. I mean, wow.
She's got a very interesting story and many different names. So you've said the ending thing. That's good.
Was that not to yourself? What was that? Chris, you've said the ending.
No, for me, because I did the bit about Festa not being imposter versus being an imposter.
Sorry.
And the only other thing I've got here is David Levy, who
have a bit of credit.
He executive produced the 60s television take on the Addams Family, argued that he held many of the trademark Addams Family features that were used in the film.
Until he went for dinner with Lady Coylton.
She
took 98% of those.
And so I believe
just one dinner.
I believe he brought
it's practicing.
I believe he brought this up just before the film came out.
Right.
And so Paramount did not want to go to court and did want to make a sequel down the line. And so they settled with him. No doubt because it opened bigger than anyone was expecting, and then the sequel got fast-tracked. But more on that on Thursday. So let's do the bits. Vicky, favourite scene?
So just two things. This is just a special mention for, you know, sometimes, Alex, you talk about when things are cut really well and it just makes you feel quite emotional. The cut when Gomez and Morticia walk into the big room where they're going to have the party, and he says, how long is it since we last waltzed? And she says, hours. I fucking love that. And then they twirl around, cut to the party in full swing. That cut is amazing. I love that so much. So just a little shout out to that. So this scene, I don't know if it's the best scene, but it is my favourite, and it's Wednesday and Pugsley's school show, because that arterial spray is still quite shocking for two kids. But it's when you see this, what, you know, Barry Sonnenfeld talked about, the family are really together. So they don't get covered in blood. They're really proud of their kids, even though they don't like this school environment, because obviously they're a bit sort of fish out of water there. They're there to support their children, and their kids absolutely kill it in this show, and they're just a really supportive family that are completely united. I think it's lovely.
Alex, I'm guessing you're going to go for the same.
The blood orgy that is the school play. But for me, I agree with what Vicky said, but it's just that shot of the front row where their faces are literally like blood red, and they've just like in the horror on their faces.
Yeah, and obviously I'm picking that as well.
Oh,
but,
good.
Yeah, wow. It's kind of only one winner this week. But there were lots of issues with cinematographers on this film. And so, interestingly, the DP was sick the week they filmed this. And so the great Bill Pope shot this, of the Matrix fame.
Oh, wow.
Edgar Wright movie fame. Yeah, that's who shot the Hamlet scene.
Amazing.
Most valuable whatever, Alex.
I mean, this is a tough one this week. Barry Sonnenfeld for weathering the storm that was making this film, and his directorial debut. It's mad that it's so good, this film. Raul Julia, I've always loved as Gomez. This was the first movie I discovered him, and sadly, obviously, he passed so soon after the sequel, so I never really got to see him in a lot more stuff. Christopher Lloyd as Fester, he's just brilliant. But the funniest moments of the film belong to Christina Ricci as Wednesday Addams. It's just the delivery of every line. The lines that I guffawed at most in this movie all belong to her. I was amused throughout, but I actually vocalised when it was her doing her thing. So it's Christina Ricci for me.
Vicky, you picking the same?
No, I'm not. I feel the same as you do, but it's for Morticia. So I think she, as a girl, when I was little, it was Wednesday all the way. Like I would have watched the standalone Tim Burton.
It's a roundabout way of saying I haven't matured.
No. So I'm not having a go at you. It's just I didn't notice Morticia properly when I was little, and I think she gets the best lines. A few of them when she's talking about the cyanide, as if we'd run out. That's awesome. When she's on the torture wheel, you've done this before. She's just so good, and the commitment to it. You want to be her and have her life, a husband that is obsessed with you, this large and comfortable home, the composure, which I now know is a result of her not being able to turn her head, but she's satisfied. She's got class. I'm obsessed with her. She's brilliant.
Nostalgia might have a part in this because I checked. I was of the right age to be infatuated with Wednesday Addams when I first saw this.
For my MVW, I think it's totally unfair to pick Angelica Houston and not Raul Julia. I think they come as a pair, so I'm going to give him a vote. I think it's a wonderful performance that, as Barry Sonnenfeld said, is so full of emotion and life that he brings the film to life. What would you change, Vicky, if you changed anything?
Here we go. Strap in for your structure lecture.
Is it not the kids' thing?
No.
Okay, I'll just do mine quickly so we can listen to yours in full, properly. Mine would have been the kids crying because it takes me out of the movie because I'm like, how did they do that? And so I'm not enjoying the scene for the gag.
Okay.
Go.
So they do it more in the sequel, obviously, but the whole family get turfed out and have to make it on the outside, which they do when they lose their home. That has Act 2 vibes written all over it. As an Act 3, it doesn't work because it doesn't advance the plot. The plot in Act 3 is they try to live on the outside. They can't. Morticia just goes back to the house. That doesn't advance the plot in any way. As an Act 2, it works. They try to live. They can't. They hatch a plan to get the house back. So you either lose it altogether because it's not fully explored, you do it all in the sequel, or you bump it earlier and change the rest of the structure.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Fish Out of Water, have them interacting with the world more in the middle of the movie. It's just a no-brainer. That's what needs to happen here, because that's where the humour comes from. You spend too long in the house with them, the jokes get repetitive. The humour is having them interact with us, with normies.
Just to provide an alternate argument to why that doesn't work is because you are transported into the Addams' world in these movies. Like, most of it does take place in the house, and the house is a safe place. And even in the sequel, Camp Chippewa, it's still...
Yeah, they get out. They spend more of the movie outside.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I just think... Yeah, I just find the idea of them walking around regular world, it's like you want to do that as minimal as possible because it suddenly becomes a very different movie where you're sort of seeing like this close-knit group of people in a close-knit environment, like suddenly just in regular regular world, you don't feel as transported to a magical place, which the Addams Mansion is.
And we need a plot as well.
That'd be good.
Maybe.
I thought maybe one way direction you go in is that once all the weird members of the family appear in the big party reunion, maybe have someone die and turn it into an Addams Family Who Done It. That will keep you in the house. But you've got all these interesting monsters characters that you could have fun with that you don't. It's just, I think the film is lacking in storyline. I think we can all agree on that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But like Beetlejuice, for example. Like Beetlejuice, they don't really leave the house ever and you feel like trapped in this world, which is great. You don't want to see them in the real world. But okay, fine, good. We done?
Yes.
Lovely. All right, then. Are we doing a quiz this week?
Yeah.
All right, fine.
Let's do a quiz.
Okay.
Yeah. Vicky's on a roll, if you can call 1 week a roll.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this one isn't about strip clubs. I'm sorry.
That was me.
Oh, yeah.
I won the strip club one. Oh, Vicky won.
What did you win?
What was it last
I
week?
Won. How many kills? She's sorry.
Oh, yeah. How many kills?
How many kills?
All right.
From films that you love and have seen about a million times.
Yeah. And I got all the strip clubs that you love and enjoy visiting.
So, the Addams Family are a famous family. These are six more famous family. I'm going to describe the family, and then you've got to tell me the family's last name.
Are they from films or are they real?
To narrow it down, the first five are real life families, and the last is a fictional family.
Okay.
Now, from any walk of life, these are just famous families.
See, we're taking so seriously. We can't relax and enjoy it. Look at us. Terms of reference, Chris. We need to know. Okay,
they're from all different walks of life. See, when I ask the question, you'll know what bit of the world they're from.
You look so gleeful. You do, look at you!
I'm trying to figure out, how do you want to do it? Do you want to shout out the answer first, or do you want to go, when you know the answer, go...
Oh, I'm not sure I can do that. I've got quite sweaty hands at the moment.
Yeah, let's do the second one.
If you don't want to do it, let's know.
I think I'm just going to shout.
Okay, just shouting. Okay.
Just shouting.
Okay, so all I need is the last name.
Right. Okay.
These twins wanted to know when they'd be famous.
Bros.
Oh.
What?
Oh,
Luke and Matt Goss?
Goss.
Yes. Sorry.
The last name. You both said Bros.
Sorry. Luke and Matt Goss.
That's the name of the band. Okay. You're looking at me like I'm mad. Yeah. I'm looking at you like you're mad.
Yeah, apologies.
Vicky got it.
Yeah.
Luke and Matt Goss. Or Luke, Matt and Goss, as my brother thought they were called, the three of them.
What was the other one called?
Matthew?
Craig.
Oh, yeah.
Was he a Goss?
No.
Right.
No.
Was he not? Oh, no. They got rid of him quick smart.
Did they?
He looked nothing like them.
No, I know, but they were twins. I thought he was just their other brother.
They were Aryan twins, and then you had this bloke at the back smacking a drum.
Yeah, they shot him out of focus in all the photos. So you can just normally see his eye in the poster.
Right, I'm going to give you the names of the children in this family.
Okay.
Elizabeth, James...
Olsen.
Lachlan.
Biden.
Oh, Murdoch.
Correct!
Yes!
My next clue was they all want to succeed their father.
Don't need it!
Didn't need it.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Members of this acting dynasty appeared in Clash of the Titles favourites Scream and True Romance.
Arquette.
Correct!
Oh, my God! Oh, I'm going to do it!
She's like, oh, no. She's
only
halfway.
No, wait.
Only halfway.
Everybody, oh, my God, my heart. Calm down. Just calm down.
Gangsters got a member of this family elected president, then gangsters had him killed, allegedly.
Kennedy,
fuck off.
Yes!
Shit. All right, I take back my hubris.
These brothers played in defence for Manchester United and England.
Southgate. Oh, Neville.
Oh,
correct.
For fuck's sake.
Oh, please don't say. And do you know what their dad's called?
Neville.
Yeah.
Do I get a point for that?
Nope. he's dead now. Right. Fictional family.
You know,
the
Kennedy's
last question.
Dead as well.
Yeah. I said they had him killed.
Yeah, no, I know. It just felt like there were points not being handed out because he was dead.
Right. This is the fictional family.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the Christian names of this fictional family. You've got to give me the surname. Marilyn. Eddie,
Monroe.
Lily.
The Monsters.
It's the Monsters.
Yes! Holy shit, brought it back
wait,
to a tie
wait,
break!
Wait. He hasn't won, has he? No.
It goes to a tie break.
And then we finish now! Yay!
You celebrated too early.
I did.
Maybe not. You might get this one.
Oh no, there's a pressure now. What, wait, is it fictional or real?
Who played? Yeah, this isn't a family question now.
Okay.
Who played Gomez Adams in the 1998 TV movie?
Tim Curry. No
Vicky,
way.
Vicky.
Are you kidding?
Vicky. Yeah, Vicky got it. Yeah, you got it. You got it just first. Well played.
I think that was a draw, personally.
Well played.
Vicky. I want a photo.
Well played, Vicky. Yes.
Oh, it's so undignified for me. Every week, I'm either furious and red or happy and red. Oh. There's just no in between. I feel like all this stuff, I'm going to cry.
And that's fine. The obligatory Tim Curry mention.
Yeah. You know what? You know what? I'm not going to argue it because of the whole debacle about the Sheffield shopping centre. So I think now anyone who's still clinging on to the justice for Vicky hashtag that was doing the rounds, we are now back to parity. I'm not going to argue it. Fine.
I was in the room. You were first that time. She was first this time. Lovely stuff.
Good. Right then, next week. Let's look ahead to next week's Clash. It's My Choices next week. And the clue I have got for you today for next week's Clash is this. The cost of love is playing the game. The cost of love is playing the game. Right, that's it for this episode. We'll be back on Thursday, of course, when we're doing Adam's Family Values. In the meantime, if you haven't done already, please check out our YouTube channel, Clash of the Titles on YouTube. Subscribe. Have lots of fun there. And subscribe to us on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your pods. Tell your friends about us and we'll speak to you Thursday. Have a happy, happy Halloween.
Clash of the Titles is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.